Welcome to Under Lock and Key, news and commentary about prisons from the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League and the Maoist Internationalist Movement.
America calls itself the land of the free, yet it has 2 million people locked up.
A commentary from Amia Abu-Jamal.
And letters from Indiana prisoners.
The U.S. incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other country, sending more black men to prison than college. The purpose of this program is to educate about and inspire activism against the American lockdown. February 15 marked the arrival of the 2 millionth prisoner in American prisons. This is just another landmark in the runaway incarceration in America that helps the imperialists control the population. With a higher proportion of people in prison than any other country in history, the U.S. comprises 5% of the world's population, but has 25% of the world's prisoners. The lockup craze in the United States hits the oppressed nations within U.S. borders disproportionately hard. 1 in 3 black youth is in prison or on parole. And as Mim points out in every issue of Under Lock and Key, the U.S. imprisons a higher proportion of blacks than even was found in apartheid South Africa. Yet in spite of these statistics, the presidential campaign again makes an issue of being tough on crime. George W. Bush proclaimed with pride his position in support of even harsher sentencing for drug offenses. In Texas, under his governorship, the prison population rose from 41,000 to 150,000, much of the rise from prosecution for drug possession. The Republicans are not alone in their crime crusades. Clinton has increased mandatory minimum sentences, put more cops on the streets, and built more prisons. Both Democrats and Republicans trip over each other to declare themselves the toughest on crime. This position appeals to their settler nation constituents. The United States spends $45 billion every year to hold prisoners in its dungeons. This money brings jobs to predominantly white communities, which have learned the economic value of the war on crime. This war on crime is very popular with the white nation in the United States. The prison industry is the biggest employer after General Motors, with more than 523,000 employees. Locating prisons in rural communities has had a tremendous impact on these areas, providing jobs for many white people. The export of prisoners from the cities has led to a 5% growth in the population in rural areas over the decade between 1980 and 1990. The $45 billion spent on prisons is only a part of the money spent to control the American population. This number does not include the cost of an occupying army of cops, which spends its time in oppressed nation communities shooting down people like Amadou Diallo. This number also does not include the cost of the injustice system, which gives the oppressed nations unfair trials and imposes harsh sentences for actions that the government of this country carries out daily without repercussion. Mim marks the year 2000 and the incarceration of the 2 millionth prisoner in the U.S. with our Under Lock and Key 2000 campaign, mobilizing both prisoners and people on the outside to fight the injustice system. If you would like more information on setting up educational events in your area to build the Under Lock and Key 2000 campaign, contact us.
In a few moments, we will bring you a commentary by Mumia Abu-Jamal. Mumia is a black nation revolutionary fighting for his life on Pennsylvania's death row. Mumia was framed for the murder of a police officer because he is an outspoken opponent of American imperialism.
This is Cornel West. Will we ever listen to and learn from our bloodstained prophet? After over 15 years of nightmarish jail conditions, Mumia Abu-Jamal's soul is not only intact but still flourishing, just as the nation's soul withers. As one who has lived on the night side of this dream, unjustly imprisoned for a crime he did not commit, Mumia Abu-Jamal speaks to us of the institutional injustice and spiritual impoverishment that permeates our culture. He reminds us of things most fellow citizens would rather deny, ignore, or evade.
Philadelphia, New York, New Orleans, Los Angeles. In city after city, we find case after case of not only police corruption, but vicious police violence. Young people are beaten, women are assaulted. People who are taught to believe police are their friends find out they are often deadly enemies, armed with the power of the state. In city after city, police corruption scandals blare across the front pages, telling us of cops who moonlight as drug dealers, sowing the seeds of social poison from their squad cars. The media react with manufactured outrage, and the cycles of corruption reoccur again, again, and again. The recent Mullen Commission hearings held in New York City were but viler, more corrupt echoes of the Knapp Commission hearings into cop corruption a generation before. Cops caught stealing, thieving, and or robbing excite the public mind. But what of cops who brutalize, beat, or kill? How many cops of the hundreds who beat, brutalize, or kill people all across this land are ever prosecuted for their acts? How many are convicted? The numbers are minuscule. The widely reported Rodney King beating case showed us how judges bend over backwards to assure criminal cops that things will be taken care of and they won't be hurt badly if sentenced. The white majority media treat cop stealings as worse offenses than cop killings, and by so doing, seek to minimize those acts in the public mind. Thus, it is the contention of many cops charged with such offenses that they were only doing their job. Put quite another way, their jobs are to kill, to beat, to brutalize the poor and the powerless, to defend the interests of the rich. That's what they are telling you. When the human rights group Amnesty International recently released a report denouncing New York police brutality against that city's African American and Latino communities, the white majoritarian media and police hierarchy downplayed it as if the Nobel Prize-winning group was interfering. The interests of white majoritarian media converge with the interests of predominantly white police forces in the protection of the status quo. That status quo is, in America, white supremacy and the oppression of peoples of color. And to protect that status quo, it is necessary to look the other way when cops beat, lie on the stand, brutalize the poor and the powerless, or even kill. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Health conditions in Indiana. A letter from a prisoner. I became sick in here from eating the food in the dining hall, and others got sick also. The doctor told me I had gas and gave me some gas tablets and told me that there was nothing wrong with me. Later that evening, I was rushed back to the healthcare staff again by wheelchair. I started vomiting a thick yellow substance in blood, and I had chills and a fever. The doctor and the nursing staff sent me back to the dorm in pain. The next morning, I started to brush my teeth and discovered my tongue was black. The CO and the OIC were notified by my roommate. I was told that I have to wait until the next shift for medical help. Upon reaching the healthcare staff again that morning, the nurse drew blood, and the doctor was still saying there wasn't anything wrong with me. I told him and I showed him that my tongue had turned black, and he said that that was normal because I was vomiting. I then began to fear for my life in here. Another guy there started taking some x-rays of my stomach area. He told me there was a problem around my colon and appendix. I was finally taken to Wishart Hospital in Indianapolis. I was put on antibiotics and another liquid by IV for 4 days. I was told that my white cell count was very high and whatever I had ate had poisoned my system. My bowels had turned black also. I had 4 specialists on my case all wanting to do surgery, but they were afraid of what was causing this problem. I also had 4 special kinds of x-rays on my abdomen. I was told that I couldn't eat or drink anything until they found out what the problem was for sure. Well, for 7 days I couldn't eat or drink anything and had a fever over 101 degrees for 3 days. Thanks for your concerns, comrades. In solidarity, an Indiana prisoner.
Indiana prisoner hunger strikes. I am writing this letter from the Maximum Control Complex in Westville, Indiana. I am requesting your help as I prepare to protest several conditions that are taking place within the confines of these walls. Your letters, calls, petitions, etc. will be greatly appreciated. I am planning on going on a hunger strike to protest the following: police brutality as a form of recreation, poor medical care, illegal conviction by the hearing committee, overt racism by white staff, which is 90% here while the prison population is 90% African, food isn't prepared properly, The food is tampered with by the staff, who retaliate against prisoners. Prisoners on Level 5 pod have very limited access to the law library. We aren't fed properly, which results in drastic weight loss, and our grievances remain unchanged and unresolved. The administration has done nothing positive in terms of resolving the problems here at this facility, and from all indications, they have no intention of rectifying the many wrongs that pervade this facility. Censorship has been stepped up in the guise of security concerns, and this practice allows staff that are untrained and unqualified to read our mail. So whenever there is something within the content of our mail that these untrained staff do not understand, they immediately label it a threat to security. The staff that deal with our mail are the same staff who many of us have encountered either verbally or physically. So the chance of our mail being handled by revenge-seeking staff is great. This form of harassment is just another wicked tactic that administrators use to retaliate against prisoners. The newest form of harassment is gang labeling. There are several staff here that are living out their detective fantasies, and in doing so, have caused many of us to suffer by labeling prisoners as gang members without having anything to substantiate this. There are several prisoners who have been falsely labeled without ever being involved in any so-called gang activities. There are no write-ups or any other documentation that the staff can show, other than using their word. Many incidents here are hard to dispute from our side because the staff's word is always given credibility over a prisoner's. There is always a cleanup person on standby, waiting to cover up the truth. I am willing to sacrifice myself by going on a hunger strike to expose these barbaric conditions that are taking place here at this facility, but I will need your help and your support. Letters, calls, petitions, etc., demanding an unbiased investigation will be greatly appreciated. It is a goal of mine to fight ceaselessly against oppression and to penetrate the public's consciousness with the truth about what goes on in these dungeons. Contrary to popular belief, these prisons harbor human beings, not animals and subhuman creatures. I ask that you show your support by making inquiries into these situations here and demanding an investigation into the wickedness that is taking place within these walls. Any letters, calls, or petitions should be sent to the Indiana Department of Corrections. Your support makes a difference. Dare to struggle, dare to win. Written by an Indiana prisoner, November 24, 1999.
Another Indiana state prisoner writes, "In D cell house on the east side where I still languish, the intensity of repression has increased. Those who maintain my captivity have converted D East into a long-term super maximum punitive segregation unit. Virtually no environmental stimulation exists. High intensity warfare is being fully enforced. Those who maintain this oppressive regime are using this unit to forestall the potential revolutionary elements and to destroy the growth of a new revolutionary seed that is being planted in the minds of our next generation. By creating this tool of repression to suppress and silence the revolutionary cadre like myself, because I'm educating my young African brothers, the neo-colonialist administration here has been using a subjective criteria to place people under repression. Our leaders and myself are being targeted and subjected to repression for our political activities. I have been under this repression since September 1998. I have not committed any misconduct. I came here from another institution without any segregation time. And yet, I am Class 1 and have not had a disciplinary report in well over a year. But it's obvious from my current situation that my behavior is not of any concern to my oppressor. They are once again persecuting me for my political, cultural, and philosophical views, which are not influenced by the concept of white supremacy. Since no objective criteria exists to enable me to get off this unit, these officials expect me to crawl on my hands and knees and jump through hoops before the Klan-controlled board decides to let me into general population. I'll be damned if I renounce my principles to those who oppress me. The new reactionary warden, Randall Anderson, is an Uncle Tom. He hates anything that looks like him. I can't get him to take action against these Klan counselors, case managers, and unit managers. My incoming legal and personal mail is being systematically withheld. I can't call my family because of these racist counselors who refuse to allow me to use the phone in the evening when my loved ones are off of work. The administration here refuses to provide indigent prisoners with soap, shampoo, razors, deodorant, lotion, hair, and grease. They claim that I owe them over $8,000 in connection with the attempted murder of two pigs. But no court has ordered this. The law library here is refusing to afford me case laws, and the counselors refuse to give me paper to write letters and do my legal work. The Uncle Tom warden refuses to acknowledge my complaints about this. Indiana Code 11-11-5-4 makes it clear that none of the hygiene, legal research, and stationery or mail is supposed to be denied to prisoners as part of a disciplinary action, but this rule is being ignored. Our struggle must intensify against the beast, writes an Indiana prisoner. This has been Under Lock and Key, a revolutionary anti-imperialist league and Maoist internationalist movement program about prisons. For more information, contact RAIL, P.O. Box 712, Amherst, Massachusetts, 01004, or email radio@mim.org.